It has turned into an incredible rally in the grain markets, and there's no denying some of the strength in the corn prices is driven by weather concerns. There's concern about the weather in Brazil, the Black Sea region, and of course, right here in the U.S. The question is, how much of that concern is justified?
Live, whether you like it or not, via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. You see what I did there, buddy?
See what you did there.
Whether you like it or not, this afternoon we are talking weather. Kevin Marcus of Marcus Weather Consulting. Right after the news, Oliver Slope from Blue Line Futures. I am handsome newsman Davis Michelson. Now welcome back the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
All right, Davis. Yes, thank you so much. Appreciate that. And welcome, everyone, to AgriTalk. And, I mean, I don't know why we ever really gave up that name from, like, 7 years ago, that market rally thing. Because this is a market rally, dude.
Well, the problem is, and I don't mean to be a bucket of ice water here.
Okay.
I don't mean to be an ice bucket of water here, Chip.
All right.
But for every market that rallies, every market rally, there is also a market tank.
Yeah.
So, I mean, technically, to maintain balance, we would have to call the show Market Tank on some days. Today, sure, of course. They'd be like, oh, I see why they called it that.
Dude.
But nobody wants to be the host of Market Tank, do they?
Yeah, but it's really it was really cool on days like today. I mean, limit up corn.
Yes.
Limit up old crop corn. 30-cent plus gains in beans. Soybean meal, soybean oil came along, and I shouldn't say came along. Heck, they were leading it in many ways. Did you see the wheat trade after midday?
Yeah.
It's like Zoom. Every seller in the wheat pit just evacuated and left. Mm-hmm. It was crazy, man. Crazy. And that market pushed to the upside. Of course, with these higher grain prices, it was difficult to generate much upside momentum in the livestock trade, the cattle, the pigs, both under pressure from some pressure on the equities markets as well, some concern over consumer confidence out there. Dude, we got a lot to cover. Let's go ahead and get into it.
Well, Chip, sellers stayed away from the grain markets, allowing buying to drive prices sharply higher. The midweek rally happened with increased talk that inflation will be an issue sooner rather than later for the U.S. and global economies, and as investment money flowed out of equities, increasing concern about global production hotspots for corn and wheat also chased selling out of the markets, Chip.
Yeah, we'll talk with Kevin Marcus about those hotspots that are out there. He's identified more than a couple. So we'll get the details from Kevin coming up in a bit.
Well, wheat export sales in the weekend at April 15 totaled 614,000 metric tons, with old crop sales of more than 240,000 tons and new crop sales of nearly 374,000. The old crop bookings outpaced trade expectations, while the new crop sales were at the top end of trade guesses. Word that China is booking French wheat was bullish as it draws tighter global wheat supplies. And the cold temperatures in the U.S. are thought to have caused some permanent crop damage. July hard red winter wheat, 37 cents higher, 674 and three quarters. July soft red surged 35 and a half cents on the day to 710 and a half. September spring wheat, 30 and one quarter cents higher on the day. That one closed at 731 and three quarters. Chip.
The low this month in July SRW wheat is 610. Oh, no, I'm sorry. 601 and a half is the low. We've rallied more than a buck 10 in the month. In the month. It's just an astonishing move, dude.
Old crop corn sales in the weekend at April 15 totaled 387,500 metric tons, with new crop sales reported at 29,500 tons. Both were at the low end of trade expectations. The slow start to the planting season in the U.S. provided some support for corn prices, but speculative buying and weather threats to Brazil's Safrinha corn crop provided most of the price support. May corn futures 25 cents higher, 650 and a half. July corn closed up the 25 cent limit at 631 and a half. December corn closed at 553 and a quarter, up 16 and three quarter cents. And I got to tell you, Chip, I can remember a time not so long ago when I wondered, oh, what is limit up in corn? Huh, I don't even know.
Now you do.
I do.
And we've had, I mean, it's the second one this month. I shouldn't say that. It was March 31 that we had a limit up move in corn. The low this month is 480 and three quarters. And we had a high today of 557 and a quarter. Explosive move in here.
Old crop bean sales of just over 64,000 metric tons were below trade expectations, but new crop sales of more than 315,000 tons were in the middle of expectations. Soybean oil futures exploded after midday, with traders noting increased demand for bio and renewable diesel feedstocks. Some traders are now comparing the rally in bean oil to the ethanol-driven push in corn prices that started in 2008. May soybean futures, 36 cents higher, 15.33 and a quarter. July surged 34 and three quarter cents to 15.14 and one quarter. November bean futures closed at 13.38 and one quarter, up 28 cents.
The low in November soybean futures this month came on the 12th. On the 12th, and it was at 12.42 and three quarters. And we had a high today of 13.46 and three quarters. It's more than a buck off the low since the 12th. It's crazy, this move.
Old crop cotton sales totaled just over 103,000 bales, with new crop sales of nearly 43,000 bales. Still, May cotton 19 points lower, 84.64. December cotton gained six ticks, 83.75. Looks like Oliver's standing by. You want to go there?
Absolutely, I do. Thank you so much, Davis. Oliver Slope, Blue Line Futures. How you doing, Oliver?
Holy smokes, what a day, huh?
Crazy. I mean, I it feels like I'm asking you the same question every week now, Oliver. I mean, was it a lack of sellers in the market, or did the buyers take over?
Well, I think probably a little bit of both. There's, you know, no real natural seller in the market right now, it appears. And one thing that we've been talking about, probably sound like a broken record, is that expansion of the fund position limits. You know, typically they get to 300, 350,000 contracts, and that's it. But now they can nearly double that, which gives them ammunition. Not only gives them ammunition to add, but if they take advantage of that, it really squeezes the producers and commercials who are record net short. And I think some of that squeeze is what we saw today when we saw the prices accelerate higher in both corn and soybeans. But that fund position, I think, more so fits with corn than soybeans, but obviously they're all working together. And it's going to be an interesting couple of weeks, because we know that this can remain intact for some time. There's going to be a reversion to the mean. There's going to be sharp and violent pullback, but that doesn't necessarily mean that the top is going to be in. But expect the volatility to continue on both sides.
Right, right. Okay. Does it feel to you like the specs, the funds, are just like figuring out what that expanded limit might mean to their collective ability to move this market around?
I think so. And I've been kind of wondering what it's going to take for them to actually, you know, aggressively add to their already record long net position, basically. But I think we're seeing that today. And with how producers and commercials are positioned right now, it could potentially be a powder keg. I'm not saying it's going to play out that way, but the cards are certainly stacked that's a real possibility.
Yeah, what they discovered today is that if they come in and buy a little bit, the long positions, the massive long positions that they had on before, are worth 25 cents more in corn and 30 plus cents in soybean. So it's just, I mean, it feels like hang on time in here. It really does. Oliver, thank you so much, buddy. We'll talk to you later.
Take care.
You bet. Oliver Slope, Blue Line Futures. We're talking weather. Kevin Marcus, Marcus Weather next. You might already know that POET produces 2 billion gallons of bioethanol and 5 million tons of high-protein Dakota Gold animal feed each year. But did you also know that POET uses the same process to produce a suite of other bioproducts, like purified alcohol for cosmetics and sanitizing products, renewable CO2, and oil for renewable diesel? The market for green products made from crops harvested right here in the Midwest is growing at an unprecedented rate, and that means even more reliable domestic demand for your grain. Farmers aren't just feeding and fueling the world, they are growing sustainable solutions that protect the environment and preserve our way of life for future generations. POET believes in the power of agriculture to meet the world's most pressing needs. Learn more at poet.com/products.
Never miss a story. Text NEWS to 31313 to have today's top stories delivered to your phone.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. We're going to be talking weather today with Kevin Marcus. Before we get to that, though, we got to talk about these beef and pork sales real quick and get the closes in livestock, Davis.
Well, as a matter of fact, beef sales were outstanding. 24,600 metric tons. Higher feed costs sent livestock futures lower. June live cattle, $1.40 lower today, $115.85. October cattle down $1.12.5, $121.17.5. Man, May feeders are having a tough time with this corn rally. Down 257.5 on the day, 137.02.5.
Right.
And on the snout side,
hold on.
Yep,
as soon as they figure out how tight the feeder cattle supply might be here in the next 60 days, I still think that there is potential for that feeder market at least to stabilize in this area, potentially move higher because supplies are going to be a little tighter than I think are being reflected in the futures market. And this live cattle futures market, the June is too cheap, I think. And I know that there's cattlemen out there rolling your eyes and say, really, do you think? You can't be like that. I mean, the cash market is trading at a premium to this futures price. And even the cash market with where the box beef trade is, We need to move some of that money further down the chain and get it to the feed yard, man. And I'm not exactly sure what it's going to take to move the leverage, but it needs to happen.
Sounds like we're working on a cattle tunity, Chip.
Yeah, we may be.
On the snout side, a bookwork error turned into bad news for the hog market. Mexico canceled purchases of pork that totaled 45,000 metric tons for delivery in 2020. Yeah, for delivery last year. Those sales had to be taken off the books for 2021, resulting in a net sales reduction of 22,000 tons for this year. Of course, that means 2021 sales totaled about 23,000 tons, but the visual damage was already done. You know, those columns in the Excel spreadsheets can be real tricky. You got to have your readers on when you're fiddling in there. May lean hogs down 15 cents, 107.45. June hogs drooped 97.5, 103.55, Chip.
Yeah, let me make everybody feel better. China bought 13,100 metric tons of pork for delivery in the 2021 year. That's a nice purchase from China. Japan bought another 2,700. South Korea, another 1,500. Australia bought 1,500. Canada bought 1,100. And those were for delivery this year. So there was good pork demand around. Mm-hmm. And the other thing, in the week, we shipped almost 44,000 metric tons of pork, Davis. I mean, that's a stupid big number. Mexico, 13,800. China, 13,400. Japan, 3,900. South Korea, 2,900. Philippines, 2,000. Hey, the demand for pork around the world is just phenomenal. Okay.
We're having a swine time with the pork market right now.
Fantastic.
Got it.
Yes, absolutely. I get it. All right. Hey, let's talk the weather. We've got Kevin Marcus, Marcus Weather Consulting with us. Kevin, it's good to talk with you again. How are you?
Good, Chip. How are you today?
Well, dude, I mean, I go back to the early 90s when you and I first met. And I think about, you know what? No, we met before that. We met in the late 80s. Good grief. And I think about how important weather forecasters and were at that time to help interpret everything that was happening out there around the world. Fast forward 30-some years, and here we are, Kevin. There are people that feel like they can get a handle on it because of the immediacy of communication out there that's available to them now. They feel like they can get a handle on it very quickly. And then we get a day like today when all of a sudden everybody's focused on dry conditions down in Brazil and that Safrinha corn crop, man. What you do and what all weathermen do still really, really matters to the markets, to farming. So Rest assured, Kevin, we are well aware of how important it is what you do here, man. Thank you for what you're doing. And and step me through it. What?
Well, I mean,
what?
You know, this is my 41st year in commodity weather analysis, and you're probably asking how is that possible since I'm only 42.
Sure.
Unless, you know, I was born to do this. So.
Love it.
So you know, yep. And God gives everybody special talents. So
yes.
This was my interest to understand how weather has an impact on crop production, on yield. So I also got a degree in agronomy to help out with that understanding. So so I've been through a lot over those 41 years, seen a lot, and I think one of the issues that the market struggles with is that we came through, you know, roughly since 2014. Several years of plenty, and a lot of folks that are newcomers to the market don't know what a bull market looks like and how quickly, how violent it can be when you're running short on supplies. So we had sort of the perfect storm come together last year with the derecho and drought damage and China having all kinds of weather-related issues with typhoons and Yangtze River flooding. And so that they develop massive food security issues at the same time they're trying to rebuild their hog herds. So that, you know, that was the undergirding of what you're seeing right now. And so, you know, usually this time of year, we're just worried about putting seed in the ground and not paying attention to South America. You think the season's done, but that's safrinha crops. Now, you know, 3/4 of the Brazil corn production.
Right.
And, you know, we were predicting back when we saw the month delay in soybean planting in Mato Grosso in Goiás last October, you know, we have 5 standout years that have had similar late starts, and out of the gate, you could have slashed 11% off of the yield in safrinha, and that would have taken your production down to 77 million metric tons, which is actually where we started, while the market's still looking at, you know, low to mid 80s. And so that, you know, the reason for that is that you have a hard stop to the rains in Mato Grosso and Goiás in early May. So, you know, it's not like here in the U.S. You know, we can plant corn in June in Illinois and sneak out a decent yield because the moisture's there. That doesn't happen or rarely happens in South America because of the, you know, the strong seasonality and the rainfall. So, you know, add to that, you know, we got an early end of the rains, especially in some of the southern areas, along with this late planting. And I was referring to this to my clients as a train wreck, just a matter of how many cars are going to be in this train wreck.
Yeah.
And
doggone it.
Did we lose him?
Probably going to end up 15.
Oh, there he is. There he is. Now you're back. Hey, Kevin. Kevin, you cut out on us for about 10 seconds there. So kind of rewind a little bit and start that part over for us.
So, yeah. So, this drought situation in South America and in safrinha country in Brazil, you know, that's, going to add about another 5 million metric ton drop because of the early end of the rains on top of the 10 we had already slashed. So you're looking at about a 15 million metric ton drop down to, you know, 94, 95 million metric tons. And, you know,
600 million bushels, Kevin.
Yeah. Bushel to bushel. That's, you know, where's that going to come from? It's going to increase our exports to the end of the year.
Yeah, if you take 600 million bushels away from this global market, and those are supplies that importers anticipated were going to be available to them, this is it creates what we're looking at. And you've been watching markets for longer than I have, Kevin, and it's one of the most dynamic weather influenced. I'm not going to say that it's completely weather driven, but this market is clearly weather influenced, and it is one of the most dynamic I've ever seen.
Well, we had doldrums in the late 90s. We thought we wouldn't get rid of our excess supplies. We had flat markets, and then we went through, you know, 2000. took a little break around 2006 or 7, but roughly 2000 and 2012 we had active markets, and then it's been pretty blasé the last 5 or 6 years. For one reason or another, not that the weather has been bad, but whatever, we've had some political issues wrapped in here. But the weather is back, and I think you can look forward to a lot of volatility in the weather patterns, similar to what we saw from 2008 to 2013. Similar cycles, low solar activity, higher frequency of La Nina events, and so we're in not just this year, but, you know, quite a ride here, I think, for volatility in the weather patterns for several more years.
Dude, I got to ask you this, because back in the mid-1980s, at Iowa State University, my mentor, Elwin Taylor, was saying, boy, look out. When you're in the prime of your career, you're gonna have unbelievable weather markets to be talking about. And he was talking about right now. And it's because of cycles, right?
Right.
Yeah.
He's a good man to go to for cycles.
No doubt about it. No doubt. This is crazy. Okay, when we come back, we've talked about the Brazilian safrinha crop. We got to get covered on what's happening here in the U.S. Let's get the rest of the spring outlook. Take a look at what Kevin expects into the early growing season. Man, oh, man, what a dynamic market we've got going. Weather influence all around it. We'll be back with more AgriTalk here in a moment. It's time for headline news featuring some of the headlines ripped from Pro Farmers First Thing Today. China makes a big French wheat buy. The exchange in Argentina raises the Argentine corn crop forecast there up 1.5 million metric tons to 50 million metric tons. Ukraine proposes tariff waiver on 120,000 metric tons of sugar imports. USDA to boost rental rates and incentive payments to lift CRP enrollment near the 25 million acre cap. We've got to get Vilsack on to talk about that. Is it the new set-aside effort? That's one of the questions that we've got to ask him about the CRP. Newsom launches effort to deal with drought emergencies declared in two counties in California. Major Chinese hog producers warn of a big drop in quarterly earnings coming. Guys, check out Pro Farmer at tryprofarmer.com.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. When news breaks, the newsmakers talk about it on AgriTalk with Chip Flory.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Chip. Got Davis with me, and we are talking with Kevin Marcus. Before we get back to Kevin, recap how these markets closed.
Chip, July hard red winter wheat, 37 cents higher today, 674 and three quarters. July soft red surged 35 and one half to 710 and one half. May corn futures, 25 cents higher, 650 and a half. December corn closed at 553 and a quarter, up 16 and three quarters cents. May soybean futures, 36 cents higher, 1533 and a quarter. November beans closed at 1338 and one quarter. That one's up 28 on the day. May cotton, 19 points lower, 84.64. June live cattle, $1.40 lower, 115.85. May feeders down 257 and one half, 137.02 and a half. And June hogs fell 97 and one half cents to 103.55. There's your quick market recap. Back to you, Chip.
All right. Thank you, Davis. Kevin Marcus, Marcus Weather Consulting. Kevin, one of the things that keeps going through my mind after that conversation that we had there towards the end, when you were talking about this period of weather that we're getting into, and I keep flashing back to something that Wiesmeyer loves to say, Jim Wiesmeyer, and that is, you know, watch out. These people believe what they're saying. You believe what you're saying when you talk about this period of volatility and the weather coming up between now and 2025, basically, right?
Let's just say I've seen this movie before.
Yeah. There you go.
I don't know exactly how the ending is going to go, but I pretty much know what the narrative is going to look like. And I don't know all the details, but the big picture is when you don't have an El Nino and you have sort of a dying La Nina right now, and the warmest waters are displaced into the mid-latitudes, Central Atlantic, Central Pacific, and then we also have low solar activity, which during the summer periods in the North Pole, it cools the North Pole because of, I won't get into all the details, but effectively have more, a little more cloud cover in these low solar periods. So it keeps the polar air period area colder. And so you have these extremes these extreme feedbacks, and the manifestation of that is what you're seeing at this week, these near record temperatures and freeze events. in not just in the U.S., but last week in Europe, we had temperatures, in low 20s in southern France, record temperatures there. And we had, the record cold outbreak in Texas, this past February. So this kind of a wavier pattern in the jet stream is a manifestation of this current climate setup. And once it sets up like this, it could stay this way for several years.
Right, right. Yeah, it's so important. But I feel like I've got to bring in our movie expert here for just a moment, because I want to verify what Kevin is talking about. Davis, is it true if you've seen one Hallmark Christmas movie, you've seen them all?
Couldn't tell you, Chip. I'm usually watching football or something a little more manly than that around that time period. I can tell you that.
And you never know how a football game's going to end.
We'll circle back to yesterday's Back to the Futures, though. And I can say, yes, Marty always gets home. Marty always gets home.
Always gets home. That's right.
Yeah.
Yep. Kevin, the other thing is, the last time that we talked, I don't remember if you said it on the air or if you said it after the show, and I should have gone back and listened to it to see which it was. But you basically said the last time that you were on, watch this Safrina crop. Nobody's going to believe it until it happens, and once it happens, everybody's going to, be behind the curve on just how much damage is being done to it.
Well, it's almost becoming an old story. We're just waiting for the final results.
Yeah.
I think what's up ahead here, getting the seed in the ground here in the U.S., we still got a challenge with, we're seeing, we turn the attention here to U.S. Midwest weather. We're in a transition period going from this cold and dry, we had beautiful dry conditions for planting, but, when the soil temperature is around freezing, nobody really wants to jump to it. So we got a warm up coming, but when that happens, the Gulf of Mexico is also going to open up with moisture. And we're looking at, late next week, 3 to 5 inch rains, tornadic activity, and so a lot of severe weather breaking out. And so from anywhere east of the I-35 corridor is
really
going to be in that soup, so to speak, of danger of thunderstorm, tornadic activity. Not unusual for spring, but what we're looking at to enhance that, we have Madden Joint Oscillation is one of these tropical waves we look at. It's kind of overtaken the ENSO, the La Nina El Nino signal, is of greater importance as a climate driver right now. And it's suggesting that we're going to keep these cool air masses just north of the border in Canada and maybe leaking a little south into the Dakotas, and then at times pushing into the Midwest. So when you collide that colder air, which still has some a little bit of winter attributes to it, and push it into that warm tropical air coming out of the Gulf of Mexico, it's explosive. And so we're looking at that type of activity in the month of May. And then just add a little more spice to it. We are going to have enough of a cold push at times to perhaps see a repeat of what we saw last year. If you recall, in Illinois in particular, took it on the chin, central Illinois, with a Mother's Day freeze. And that was followed by several cold, wet days. And that really messed up the corn crop in a multi-county area between Bloomington and Decatur, that region.
Yeah.
You ended up diving the corn had germinated, but it was warmer. The soil temperatures were warmer, deeper, so the growing point grew down first, and then it curved back up for a portion of the field. So the net result of that event, that cold event last May, was that you had about a third of each of those fields in central Illinois that didn't have any brace roots were curved and pollinated about a week to 10 days later than the rest of the field. So the upshot of that was that a 34,000 plant population, you had about 24,000 ears
right. That
were harvestable. So
right.
that type of sneaky, strange event is possible again this year.
Okay.
It may not be in the same place, but,
right.
but maybe,
right. gotcha.
Maybe in Iowa.
Gotcha. That active weather pattern that you're talking about, how far north does that get? It's east of I-35, and how far north?
Well, eventually, I think the cutoff is the northern edge of these systems are some Sioux Falls back into the Red River Valley, and so we will eventually sneak some showers up into the driest areas in North Dakota and up into the prairies. as we go through the second, third week in May. So they're not going to be devoid of precipitation in that drought, spring wheat drought area. But that's all we're really looking for there is a temporary reprieve. This pattern type looks pretty unforgiving for the spring wheat areas as we go through June and July.
Okay. Talk July, August, September, the second half of the growing season, Kevin. Anything in the cycles, in the patterns that you're seeing that would suggest something other than normal?
Well, the lean here is with what's called this negative Pacific decadal oscillation and warm Atlantic. There are variations within this theme, but the setup we have is similar to that period of 2008 to 2013, which correlates to drier than average conditions in the Midwest and Northern Plains, and dry and a bit warmer. So it's not a slam dunk, but that's the lean in that period. And so the other concern we have with potential for potent hot temperatures, we did a good job eroding away the drought conditions in Nebraska and Kansas the last 6 weeks, but we still have drought conditions in North Dakota prairies, and that can become literally a hot spot because dry soil is going to act more like an asphalt surface. What the temperature difference is. If you take your shoes and socks off, a grassy surface temperature in the middle of the day versus an asphalt surface. So these dry soils, droughty soils, can act more like an asphalt. So they can add 10 or 15 degrees to the daytime highs without the evaporative cooling effect. So that plus the extensive drought in the Southwest, you're going to have more potent heat available to sneak into the Western Corn Belt during pollination time. So that's another worry that I have is that we have put some rain down in the Western Midwest, it's as dry as it's been since about 2013 at this point.
Gotcha. Just a couple of minutes left here, Kevin. You started this conversation talking about some of the issues that China has dealt with in the last 12 months. Take us into the growing season in China.
But China right now is dealing with some more localized flooding in the Yangtze. It's going to do some damage to the rapeseed and to the rice crop. The later in the season, we're looking for a droughty pattern in northeast China. Last year, they had an unprecedented three typhoons in a row. The last time they had one typhoon hit northeast China directly was 1949. They had three in a row in a two-week space, flattened the corn crop. And so this year, you expect the opposite to occur. We're looking for drought in the month of August in northeast China, where most of the crop is not irrigated.
Crazy stuff. Hey, you left me 30 seconds for Brazil, for Ukraine and Russia.
Well, it's not going to be as bad as last year. It is warmer and drier than average through their July-August period. But it should give you corn yields that are close to average and a better sunflower crop, but not bumper, but just average.
Gotcha. All right, man. Let's stay in touch, okay?
All right, very good. Thanks. Great to talk to you.
You bet. That is Kevin Marcus, Marcus Weather Consulting. Look it up, man. Take a look at some of the info that he's got on his site. I think you guys will really appreciate it. There's some really good information out there. So get in touch with Kevin and talk to him about his service available. Okay, when we come back, Davis and I are going to put a wrap on today's second hour of AgriTalk.
I don't know what you're thinking. So call us at 855-4-TALK-AG and tell us what's on your mind.
Now, don't bother. I'm thinking about something. I got something on my mind.
I want to hear it.
Chip, you got anything?
No,
go. Anything real pressing you want to talk about?
No, absolutely not. I want to talk about what you want to talk about.
I want to talk about a rush to the upside in corn, beans, and wheat. Now, wheat, I kind of get, okay?
Really?
But in corn and beans, it doesn't seem like the export sales really had a whole lot to do with this. So to my mind, that makes me feel like, is there a demand element in this rally, or does I don't know. Well, I don't know.
It's a realizing demand element. Okay. We've made all the say. We've made 98% of the sales that we need to make with 4 months left in the marketing, 4.5 months left in the marketing year. We've made like 98% of the corn and soybean sales that we need to make. Right. The trick now is just getting them out of the country. And I think the market is evaluating the evidence that, yes, we are loading boats. Yes, China is waiting to take delivery of what they bought. So maybe we shouldn't be trying to roll so many of these 2020-21 sales over into the 21-22 marketing year. They probably better stay right where they're at. If that is the case, then USDA is probably still too low on its corn and soybean export estimates for the current marketing year. So they're realizing that the demand that has been flashed to the market is real.
Okay, good answer.
Okay.
That's all I got.
I don't know why you buy it on wheat.
It just seems very scary out there. And yesterday, and I mentioned it on the show too, but World Weather Inc. And, you know, okay, maybe one source. I don't know. They flipped it from, we're going to have some vegetative growth, some brown spots on the pretty green little tips of it, to we foresee potential crop damage here with this. Yeah. Crops are going to be damaged. Yield is going to take a hit because of this freeze. Yeah. I feel like that at least had to play into this. But you had decent export sales in wheat is kind of what I was saying.
Okay, I see what you're saying. Plus, you got China coming into France and buying up a bunch of wheat, like a half a million tons there.
So with maybe a full million to come, yes.
Right. Yes. And so you think, well, what difference does it make if China's in there buying French wheat? Well, what it means is if China is buying French wheat, then the other traditional importers of French wheat aren't going to be able to buy French wheat, and they're going to have to buy wheat from somebody else, and it might end up being the U.S. So we've got to keep that in mind. Mm-hmm. We've got to keep that in mind. That's a good point. I get that. If Drew Lerner at World Weather Inc. is – and I know why you mentioned them. It's because Pro Farmer – has a relationship with Drew, and they talk on a regular basis.
Right.
And it's a lot of it is in First Thing Today, a lot of that conversation. Yep. If Drew is making that statement about we are concerned that there is going to be damage to this crop, it's based more on the forecast following the freeze than the freeze itself.
So now you've taken it one step further and said that I might be right. Because when you've talked about it, you're
saying that.
I think you just did. What? I think that what you're saying is, Davis, when we were talking about all the years in a 90 whatever year and it got nipped and whatever, but then it recovered and it was a monstrous yield, and I'm all hot dry forecast ahead doesn't bode well for recovery.
Oh, you know what, you did say that. Yes, you did. Yes, you did. I do remember that now, Davis. You might have been right.
I'm on fire today. I'm out of here, everybody. Thanks for joining us on AgriTalk.
I think somehow, some way, I feel like I need to squeeze another mite in there, though. Might be right.
Okay. Oh, double might.
Double might. Might square.
You're going might
be
square.
Right. Yeah.
I'll take all the might I can get. It's all hope. It's all hope.
Different kind of a might there. Interesting conversation with a real student of the weather. Mm-hmm. I loved it. Seen this
and
movie
agronomy.
Before.
Yep.
Yeah, and agronomy. Seen this movie before. Don't know exactly how it's going to end. But it's the same kind of thing. It really is. It really is a Hallmark Christmas movie.
Mm-hmm.
So reason that I can make
Couldn't
that comparison, right?
Because I always tell you about all the Hallmark Christmas movies that I watch, and you sit so patiently through them, and you're like, "Yes, Davis."
I gave you an opportunity.
It's almost time for the show to start, Davis. Stop talking about your rom-coms.
You bet. That pattern change that he was talking about as well, April 28th through May 2nd, National Weather Service 6 to 10 day outlook. There is no place in the United States sorry, lower 48 that is looking at below normal temperatures.
Ooh.
For April 28th through the 2nd. We've got normal temperatures across most of the Corn Belt. You don't get into the above normal temperatures until you get into Michigan, Indiana, Ohio, is where we are looking at above normal temperatures. On the precip side of things, it's east of that line that Kevin was talking about, that I-35 corridor. It's east of that line, but above normal precipitation expected through Wisconsin, Illinois, southeast Missouri, and points to the east. The areas to the west of that line are looking at mostly normal precipitation for that April 28th to May 2nd. Now, the exception there would be the panhandle of Texas into western Oklahoma, southwest Kansas, where those below normal precipitation is expected. So if we are doing some damage to the wheat, some freeze damage to the wheat in that area right now, that below normal forecast on the precip is exactly not what that crop needs down there. Guys, I just got to say this real quick. I'm going to try to get through it. I was out yesterday afternoon. My mom died yesterday afternoon. It was unexpected. Doesn't make it any easier, but I so appreciate all the words of support. We'll make it through it. We've got family coming in next week. I'll be gone a few days next week.
Let's all agree to pray for the Flory family. Come on, gang.
You bet. Thank you so much. Come back tomorrow. We're going to have a free-for-all tomorrow morning. All right? Right here, AgriTalk.